I'm Tom Hall. This is Midday. It's Midday with the mayor. Baltimore City Mayor Brandon Scott joins me. After another violent Memorial Day weekend, the mayor remains committed to a multi-pronged approach to violence reduction. Progress, however, is slow. The city is strategizing on how to spend the first installment of $640 million in federal pandemic relief funds, and with more than half of city residents still unvaccinated, how will we get jabs into the arms of people who need them? Plus, the Baltimore Sun has been sold to a hedge fund with a track record of disregard for quality journalism. Is it too late to save the Sun? Reporter Liz Bowie and foundation executive Matt Gallagher discuss what's next for the award-winning paper. Midday starts after the news. Good afternoon. Welcome. I'm Tom Hall. Thanks for joining us here on Midday. Today, it's Midday with the mayor. Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott joins me from his office in City Hall. Mr. Mayor, welcome back.
Tom, thank you. Well, thanks for having me back, man.
Always appreciate your coming. A year ago, Memorial Day weekend, there were 9 murders in our city. This past Memorial Day weekend, last weekend, again, 9 murders in 1 3-day period. When it happened in 2020, it was right before the primary that you won, which led to your election as mayor. It's been a year since then. The problem is, you know, numerically worse. As of yesterday, we were at 138 homicides. The year before, at 100, we were at 130. How has your understanding of this problem evolved and changed? And what are you thinking about now in terms of solutions that perhaps, you know, you hadn't been thinking about a year ago?
Well, I think, Tom, I think that what I would first say is that for me, this problem isn't something that's just limited to last year or this year. This is something that existed for the entirety of my life. And when you think about Memorial Day in particular, it's a weekend that historically has been one of our most violent. But still, the weekend's violence angered me. And what I said, that it showed me that there are still cowards among us who are willing to take a life, no matter how small or insignificant the beef is. They're willing to kill women, children, elderly, doesn't matter. No one should be losing their life over a petty argument or disagreement. And unfortunately, we're seeing way too much of that. When you talk about evolving, it's not just about my personal evolving. It's about how we get to the point where we, as a city government, as a state government, as a entity, as a city, as a region, really in a country, as the country is seeing the violence go up in significant ways, how do we start to think about this issue in its totality? This is why this is why we're now going to be back at the table with all of our law enforcement partners through Criminal Justice Coordinating Council. Now the governor has agreed to push the state agencies to participating, because it's not as simple. And I think, Tom, what I always appreciate about you is that you, in your job, you do a great job of showing how it's not as simple as the police department or the mayor or the police commissioner, right? Because when we have folks who we arrest, right, with a gun, and then they're out right back out on the street 2 days later, and then, or someone like we had this weekend where someone was arrested in another jurisdiction with a gun early this year, and then they end up dead on our streets. We have to understand that we have to close all those gaps, but we can no longer think that we're just going to simply throw the same old things at these problems. And that's why you see hear from us about making sure that our police are focused on the right people, that we're doing the partnerships to make sure that we're impacting violent groups. We had a big federal indictment announcement made today where we had a group, the Triple C gang, was charged federally with 18 murders and 28 attempted murders. And when you hear me talk about the need to remove violent groups and violent offenders committing large amounts of violence in our city, that's what we're talking about. And under my leadership, we're going to continue to see, you're going to continue to see that strategic focus that will not just, Tom, have an impact on violence today, but will have an impact on violence as we move forward throughout the years to be able to then backfill those neighborhoods with the resources that they need.
Well, you're right. It's certainly a complicated and complex problem. There's a number of different aspects to the challenge of reducing violence, and you've long been an advocate for involving many city agencies, not just the police. But there are some of the same old things that you don't want to necessarily keep throwing at the problem that do still need to be thrown at the problem, in the sense that, for example, the clearance rates for these murders. It's very difficult for the police and the state's attorney's office to solve many of these murders. I mean, folks are doing it and they are literally still getting away with murder.
Well,
you met with the commissioner,
Tom,
yesterday. I mean, what do you see any light in the horizon about that situation improving?
No, that's actually something that they have been doing a wonderful job. When we talk last month, our clearance rate, in the month before, our clearance rate was in the 30s. Last month, in the month of May alone, 13 homicide cases were closed, and we actually issued 5 additional warrant arrests for homicides in May that we're actively looking for the people right now. The same for non-fatal shootings. We actually closed 16 non-fatal shootings in the month of May alone and have 2 open warrants. We're up to a 44% clearance rate with those open warrants that we have for homicide. The homicide detectives and the homicide unit, the folks at the district detective units around the city, and the warrant apprehension task force have been doing great work in going out and apprehending these folks, and they're going to continue to do that each and every day. We want to continue to support them. They've been building great cases. That is something that has been happening consistently over the last few months, and I have to give love to those two areas of the department who've been doing great work building those cases, partnering with our other city agencies, partnering with everyone to remove these people from our streets.
Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott is my guest. It's Midday with the Mayor. I'm Tom Hall. We have a caller on the line, Gus, who's calling from Baltimore. Gus, welcome to Midday with Mayor Scott.
Thank you very much, Tom, and thank you, Mayor Scott. And, Tom, you actually stole my thunder there a bit, asking about the clearance rate. But I'll follow up with that. First of all, thank you, Mayor Scott. Very proud of you. I won't go into how I know the mayor, but certainly very proud of his accomplishments and his taking on the challenge. My question, and I first want to give a comment, I'll admit there have been a lot of shootings lately. I think we're all on that page, and I know you're working on that. But I want to ask about something else. Is it me or has the police, and I know you just elaborated on this a moment ago, there seems to be an increase in the clearance rate, and you just elaborated on it. But one thing I would like for you to add, Mayor, if you will, talk about the partnership with the community. How has that been impactful? Because, you know, I've worked with several mayors in the past, worked with you. We've worked together. I know what that clearance rate is like trying to move the needle, but it appears that the needle is being moved in a positive direction, and it's inclusive of community input. Please elaborate.
All right. Thanks, Gus. Now, and Mr. Mayor, we should mention that, as you say, crime is up all across the country. Every major city has seen an uptick in non-fatal shootings and in murders. So this is not a problem unique to Baltimore, number one. Number two, the clearance rate, as you've just mentioned, certainly in the month of May, is showing great signs of improvement, and that's a great positive development. But back in the day, clearance rates of 65 to 70% were not uncommon. So we're still far away from solving most of the murders. But to Gus's comment about community involvement, getting consensus in the community always been a priority of yours, hasn't it?
Yeah, and I think, and good to hear your voice, Gus. It's been far too long, far too long. So I think it's about What he's talking about, Tom, is about building that partnership and true community consensus, right? Yes, and we know that we would not be able to go out here and build these cases without having that support from the community, without people saying, like, it's not okay for someone to just go and shoot and kill a woman or a little kid over something stupid, right? We know we need that. And when you see the work, for example, Safe Streets that we just announced, that the coordinated effort across our Safe Streets sites in each neighborhood, which is going to be the focus, is to be preventing violence in the southern months, focusing in on the groups where we're seeing more and more conflicts that spill between neighborhoods and across the city. Safe Streets is going to be going out to target beefs not only within their sites, but also increase their capacity across city conflicts and coordination between sites. This is something that we know. This is about evolving Safe Streets, Tom. This is about making sure that we as a city are building those relationships. When you also then go back to the police department itself, when you think about what we're doing as far as the police department's partnering with the brothers that We Are Us and the great work that they're doing outside of city government, but uplifting them and allowing them to have the support of city government, folks who are taking the responsibility as men. That's what We Are Us is doing, the responsibility as men to go out and say that these things are not okay in our neighborhood. We can help bring resources to young men and young women who need it. We can help squash some of these beefs, but we're also going to work with everyone to hold people accountable. That's how we have to continue to do that great work, and that we will continue to do that, not just as a part of our consent decree, but because we know the only way, Tom, that we'll get back to those numbers that you were talking about, numbers that I've never seen in my lifetime with clearance rates, is if we truly build that. And also, Tom, I think it's important for us to uplift some of the things that are happening in the other way, right? For us to be talking here today, you and I to here be talking today, where we're looking at street robberies and carjackings being down 30%, and even still want to highlight, although we're having the non-fatal shootings and homicide increase in the way that we have, and that's unacceptable, when we're always going to highlight that because that's about the loss of life, that we're also still pushing with a 11% reduction in total violent crime in the city as well.
Is Safe Streets the kind of program that perhaps could benefit from the federal dollars that are coming to the city? At one point, we were expecting $670 million. Now it looks like the figures settled in on $640 million. That has to do with a reexamination of the size of our population, because we have fewer people, we're getting fewer dollars. But is Safe Street something that could be funded with that federal money?
Yeah, we do believe that a program like Safe Streets, a public safety related thing, would be eligible for ARP. There are many things that we originally, Tom, we first thought would be eligible that aren't, right? When they first came out, they said that infrastructure, but now infrastructure has been limited down to a few things. But Safe Streets,
broadband
alternatives to public safety, broadband, you know, for the infrastructure. But Safe Streets, other public safety efforts would definitely be open for ARP funds.
When it comes to infrastructure, how about the water system? You know, that's been an ongoing problem. There's even a consent decree about fixing the water system. Is that, in your understanding, eligible for funding under this program?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the third option too. It's broadband, it's in water infrastructure, and there's one other one that I just can't remember off the top of my head. I'll get it before we get off, Tom. But I think it's also important to note that hopefully this won't be the only thing. The president's infrastructure package is just as critical, because with that, you're talking water, you're talking bridge, you're talking roads, you're talking schools, you're talking community centers. That's the kind of thing that we need to see. We're talking transportation, which we desperately need here. And we need that bill passed as well, because it's not just about putting this money out. It's about also making sure that we are training people who live in the neighborhoods that this violence is happening in for the jobs that are created by this kind of big influx of funds, be it ARPA or the American Jobs Act, because that's how we also deal with the rise in violence in our city.
Let's see if we can sneak in a call or two. One more call about violent crime. We'll go to Jack in Reservoir Hill. Welcome to Midday with the Mayor.
Thank you, Tom. Mr. Mayor, I know you mentioned this a little bit, but I saw that the U.S. Attorney announced the arrest today in those 18 murders. I think it was 28 shootings. It's good that we're arresting people committing these violent crimes, but I want to think about what comes next. I know you touched on this a little bit, but what specific roles should the city play in supporting these communities where violent crime takes place after arrests are made?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question, Jack, and thank you for such an insightful question. I think I always liken back, and this is something that I talk with our local partners here about. I remember when I was a young man in Park Heights, and the city and the feds did this big takedown of this drug organization in my neighborhood. And when that happened, you know who was the next group of people to show up? The next violent drug organization that was going to take their place. What we have to do and what we're going to be doing, working with our mayor's office of neighborhood safety engagement and coordinating all our agencies, is to go into those neighborhoods to see what the needs are for people that have lived through that kind of violence, lived through those kind of actions, and trying to bring the resources of all of our agencies, city government, to make sure that neighborhood remains stable and people have the access to the things that they need so that they can thrive in their community.
I call listeners' attention to the excellent story about the indictments that Justin Fenton has filed for the Baltimore Sun. And Mr. Mayor, that was a federal effort along with local officials. Are you satisfied that the federal law enforcement entities are working hand-in-hand with the state's attorney's office, that there is good cooperation, that there are cases that are, you know, being brought at the federal level instead of the state level because it makes more sense because for a variety of reasons having to do with the way the laws are written, the way the sentences are, sentence guidelines are made. Are you confident that the relationship between the U.S. attorney here in Baltimore and the state's attorney is good and fruitful?
Well, I think that today's announcement would be evident that it is. And I know that the federal attorney and the state's attorney had an actual joint press conference last week. I actually had a meeting recently with our federal attorney and the state's attorney. I know that they have a working relationship. They're going to continue to work on cases. We through the police department, our other agencies are going to continue to work to make sure that that's happening. And also, Tom, it's important for me to have a great working relationship with our federal partners, which is why I'm trying to communicate with them in a more direct way, communicate with them in a more frequent way than happened in the past, but also to show them that we can operate together and change and do some innovative of things that haven't been done in the past so that we're having the impact. And our federal partners have been great, and I'm looking forward to strengthening and even broadening that partnership as we move forward.
Let's go to Michaela, who has a question about an LGBTQ bill in front of the council. Michaela, welcome to Midday with Mayor Scott.
Hi, Mr. Mayor.
And what's your question?
My question is, there's a bill in the council that will create an office of the LGBTQ office. Do you support this bill?
Thanks
yes,
for that question.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Michaela. I have told folks for a long time that I support the bill and will sign it as soon as it hits my desk. So I am eagerly awaiting the opportunity to sign the bill.
Mr. Mayor, let me go back to the American Rescue Plan, the ARP money, $640 million. Where does it stand in terms of making determinations about how that money is going to be allocated, and how does that money fit into the current budget that the city council is considering as we speak? You've given it to them. Your agency heads are now briefing the city council about what's in it and the details. But how does the ARP money fit into the current budget that the council is considering?
Yeah, Tom, you're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of Baltimore, so we know how much of a huge impact that is going to be. The focus for me is about ensuring that the process and the way that we distribute these funds are equitable, transparent, swift, not leaving anything on the table, but also, Tom, not making the mistake that the city has before and have to send money back. The dollars just started arriving in cities, and before any federal dollars arrived, I instructed my team to develop a comprehensive accounting framework that allows us to keep the ARP dollars separate from other federal grants and city funds. That's important because we want clean data for reporting and audits and sharing the information with the public. We included the funding, as you said, in 2022 budget, but also for an Office of Recovery program. This is going to be a 10-person office headed by a chief recovery officer that's going to report to our city administrator, Chris Shorter. That office will be responsible for administering all aspects of the funding. And that is important. And this, we included it with the budget because it has to be appropriated through the regular city budget process. And we were already going through the budget process, so why put in the supplemental? Let's just do it right now. And we think it's important to have a separate entity doing that. I've been talking, of course, with my fellow mayors around the country. Folks are setting up these kind of groups so that they're not overburdening their finance or their like departments around with the funds, and making sure, again, that the folks that are working on this critical a piece and pot of money are not having to do 5 and 6 and 7 other things, so that we can get this money out. There's going to be, you're going to hear in the very near future about the internal and external process for how folks can submit to receive these dollars. We're committed to that transparent process, and that's how we're going to continue to work. We have incredible community-based organizations and nonprofits who will be open to the process. Our residents and organizations are going to hear about how other folks will be involved in this as well.
I understand that the finance department has set aside about $131 million for budget stabilization, $50 million to balance the fiscal 2021 budget. Once city agencies have made their pitch for an allocation, you will open it up to nonprofit groups, community groups, extra government entities to use some of this money in various ways?
Absolutely. There's going to be a dual process that way, where we're going to be reviewing internal and external applications for some of the money. For sure. Like I said, we have incredible community organizations and nonprofits in Baltimore who do great, important work. And this funding will be open to them, too. So that the important thing, Tom, is that we have the greatest impact on Baltimore, Baltimoreans, Baltimore business and neighborhoods that we can, especially those that were the most hard hit by the pandemic that just happened to be in Baltimore. Those have been under and invested in and disinvested in over time.
But in terms of a timeline, will the money be decided, will the allocation be decided, say, by Labor Day, by July 4th, by Christmas? When do you think?
What I'll say, Tom, I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch as we're going through the process now. When we come back next month, I can assure you that we will have you and I can have a more robust conversation about where we are and where we're going to be as far as when the money's going out, how it's going to go out in phases and things like that.
Great. I look forward to having that conversation. We just have you for another couple of minutes. The COVID Mass Vax site, the Mass Vaccination site at M&T Bank, is going to be closing next month. So far, according to the dashboard here in the city, 45% of city residents have been vaccinated against COVID-19. That leaves 55% who haven't. What's the plan, and what's your expectation about ultimately how many residents of the city we can have fully vaccinated?
Well, listen, the goal, of course, we said we wanted to get to 80% and earlier next year. Right now, and we're talking about 45, we're going to do and what we have to do. And we're now, Tom, up to over 200 mobile vaccination clinics in the city. And now we at first, of course, as you know, we're focusing them on seniors, people who are homebound, our senior facilities. We are now using the data to drive where they go. We're going into the neighborhoods where the folks, where the people aren't vaccinated. We have the lowest vaccination rates. That's what we're going to do. Partner with community members, doing true pop-ups to try to drive those numbers up. You know, folks have been asking about when we're going to release the indoor mask mandate. very clear. When we hit 65% of adults 18 or over with at least one dose of the vaccine, we're at 55 now, so we're not that far off. And we'll get there. We should get there as quickly as possible, and that's what we're going to do to make sure that we are being safe, not just through the summer, but thinking with an eye ahead, Tom, to making sure that we don't have a spike in the fall and the winter where people go back inside with variants and other things.
Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott. Mr. Mayor, thank you, sir, and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Thank you, Tom.
There's lots more on the way today here on Midday. After a quick break, an update on the fate of the Baltimore Sun. It has been sold to a New York hedge fund. We'll talk about what that means for the paper and for local journalism with a reporter and a foundation executive who are working to get the Sun back in local hands. I'm Tom Hall. It's Midday. Stay with us.
You're listening to your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.